hilarious. I love it. Okay, so I'll do my little intro and then we'll get into like kind of like who you are and then go from there. All right, cool. You ready?
Yep.
All right. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Not Boring Business podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Redman, founder of Air 5. This is not suits and handshakes business. This is not boring business. Let's go. Today we have Todd Uderstadt, right? Did I say that right?
Uderstadt.
You okay.
Got it.
I love it. All right, so give us a little bio about who Todd is. I know we've followed each other on like social for a little while now, yep. And I reached out, want to get your expertise on my podcast. It feels amazing to be 16, 17, 18, whatever you'll be, so I hope you're as excited as I am.
I am. It's going to be a lot of fun. No, the thumbnail sketch of me is I'm a former Army intelligence officer, turned into a corporate leader, turned into startup founder myself. And a couple years ago, a lot of people were calling me and say, hey, Todd, help me out. I'm a CEO of a fast growth company and we're having issues. And, I just wanted to be able to help them out. And so we started a podcast called From Founder to CEO. And 3.5 years later, we're heard in over 100 countries, and it's a lot of fun. I get to talk to founders about their personal leadership transformation journey from founder to CEO. So we're kind of like the anti-hero show for entrepreneurs, meaning we're not the cover of Fast Company, Inc., Forbes, etc. You know, we hear the dark and dirty stuff behind the scenes that founders go through when they scale themselves as a leader for their company.
I got a question now.
Yeah.
So This is one of the things that I come into contact with. So many people are really honest with me outside of the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I get them on the podcast, they're not so honest because they're being recorded. Mm. Do you ever get that from people where it's like, no, I want this to be the real story? There's a difference between someone telling you the real story when the mic is off and someone telling you the real story. It's almost like a PR'd version of it. Do you run into that and do you sense that?
Yeah, I mean, all the time. The only thing is I weed them out. So they don't come on the show unless they're ready to share something juicy about themselves and that they really learn about themselves. So, but I also prep them beforehand. So we talk about their stories and what they want to share. My goal isn't to embarrass them. And my goal isn't to make sure, you know, that their investors, if they're investor-backed, say, hey, we don't want to invest in you anymore. But it's to be about real. You know, what are the real things going on? So I don't encounter that as much as I did in the beginning because everyone knows now. So I had Seth Godin on the show a couple weeks ago, and he kind of wiggled where I tried to wiggle out sharing a personal story, right? And I said, no, Seth, remember, you got to share a story. So he did, yeah.
Oh, nice. You were actually to push him toward it.
Well, yeah, because I told him, I said, hey, that's what we do on this show. And so you got to tell about a story when you were a founder and some of the mistakes you made and your bungles and all that kind of stuff.
God, I love that. Like, it's so, it's the authenticity of it because my wife, I did it. So I just got married. I emailed you from Italy, by the way.
Oh, you did?
Lucky you. Yeah.
Like, we're about in Italy.
We were in Positano in the Amalfi Coast.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe I was in Rome when I was messaging you, but
nice.
Like setting this up.
I feel important.
So, you should. You were only just a handful of people I had contact with.
You only spoke with your wife when your honeymoon, and then me, right?
Yep, just you and my wife, and that's it.
Nice.
So, I've had a little struggle bus calling her my fiance the last like just couple weeks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the first time I got wife right on the first shot, so she'll be happy about that.
Yeah, you're gonna want to get that right now from now on. Yeah.
I'm good to go. So okay, but this raises a really good question, like about authenticity, like on here, because she told me that I can tell, at least I can tell, that you wanted to say something else and didn't. Like, you've got to go there. And I go, I know I'm going to like frustrate some of my guests if I do that. What kind of line do you draw with really getting something out of your guest running your podcast from founder to CEO and being respectful that they came on your show and kind of like, oh, I've got to get, they're the guest. I'm supposed to, one of the rules of podcasting, and I read this, maybe you tell me if I'm wrong, but is to make your guest look good, right?
Yeah.
Like, what if you vehemently disagree and it's your kind of personality and it's your audience? How do you bridge or reconcile that?
Well, I do got to go by this rule. I mean, whatever they're going to share, they can't. We don't want to hurt anyone else. Like, if you're going to be authentic and come on a podcast or TV show or something like that, that's great if you're going to talk about yourself. But my rule is, we're not going to hurt or injure anyone else. You know what I mean? Uh-oh.
And that is that's just the rule. That's it.
Yeah, that's a big rule. And then the second thing is that, you know, I talk with them about their stories beforehand. And quite frankly, a significant number of them don't have anyone to talk to. So I go through the story with them, and we sort through it together, and I say, hey, you know what? Yeah, you're comfortable saying that. Is there anyone going to get hurt if you say that? And so, yeah, we talk about it beforehand. You know, I'm an executive coach, so I work one-on-one with CEOs every day. And so I hear people's dark, dirty secrets and their dirty laundry all the time. And, you know, you kind of get a sixth sense about whether or not someone's going to get hurt or whether or not they're going to be injured, kind of sharing their information. But most of the time, 95% of the time, they are looking for an opportunity to get real and to be authentic, to your point and to your wife's point.
Well, my wife makes a lot of good points, just for the record.
I'm sure.
Okay. So now, executive coaching, like, how I've always thought that I don't want to. People have gone, oh man, you should coach people, and I'm like, I don't want to just coach people. I don't. So like, I don't know. Is executive coaching worth it? I've never thought about it for me, because I felt like advice to me was like just dime a dozen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? How do you find clients that will actually listen to you and then most likely pay you to do executive coaching?
Well, I don't have to find clients anymore. They find me.
They all come to you.
Yeah, because I've been doing it for a while now. You develop a reputation, and, you know, our company is about ready to go. We're a small little micro company, and so we're about ready to go over $4 million in revenue.
Whoa. And nice. So,
you know, I mean, there's a certain amount of you've been doing this long enough, people decide whether or not there's value in what you do, right? So sure. I don't usually have to go out and sell people to work with us. We've got a team of about 12 independent contractors, and there are three of us who are owners. And so I'll be honest with you, Jeremy, it's a lot of joy, but I ask people questions most of the time. I'm not giving advice. I mean, I ask them questions they can't answer. That's the secret sauce of...
What's one of the questions?
Oh, that I asked them?
Yeah. Just what would be a question that you would ask them, like ask me?
Yeah. Would you say the same thing that you just said to your co-founder to your mother?
Oh, that's a good one. Right. That's a great question.
Because most people respect their mom, right?
Yeah.
But like co-founder conflict is so huge and so detrimental to a significant number of startups, for example.
Do you think a better one is, would you say to your co-founder what you said to your wife, or vice versa?
I think that's a good one too, but
you know what I mean?
I find a lot more people have a better relationship with their mom and don't want to say anything bad to their mom than they would their spouse.
I'm worried my mom wouldn't understand anything I would tell, you know, like what I would tell my co-founder or my wife. You know?
If you can't explain it to your mom, you know, then and when they don't know something, you got to break it down, right? You got to make it easy to understand.
The Socratic method, right?
That's right.
Just break it in pieces.
That's exactly right.
I love that. Wait, so what's the name of your company?
So our traditional company is called Baker and DeBall. We named it after our grandmothers. DeBall is my grandmother.
Oh, cool.
And so then we've got these two brands that we grow is from founder to CEO, and another one called Daughters in Charge. We focus on daughters who are taking over their family business.
And how long has this been going?
Oh, wow. From founder to CEO is 3.5 years old, Daughters in Charge 4 years old, and Baker and DeBall since 2005. So how old are we now? 13?
13 years?
Yeah.
So it took how much of that is, well, what's the largest slice of that $4 million revenue pie?
Last 3 or 4 years, because, you know, in the beginning, you got to do all the ramp up, and it's hard to build those relationships. So, yeah, last 3 or 4 years.
Oh, my God. See, that's what I think is exciting, because, like, we just launched the Not Boring Business, like, product that we help entrepreneurs get their ideas off the ground.
Oh, cool.
And it has been like, we're talking. I was near bankruptcy and then this exploded.
Dude.
And then I'm thinking.
I get it.
Oh, my God. Like, that's what we're talking weeks and going, what am I supposed to do to what am I supposed to do with all this money? You know, like, that was the truth.
Well, what's the product?
Mm. So we templatized an app that we customize for people to get their app idea or like their solution out there for cheap, for incredibly cheap. Like normally development costs, I don't know, the first couple of people to come through have been like, they've gotten quotes of like 70, 80, 90 grand to develop their app.
Ooh.
And we were able to do it for $5,000.
And so just follow a template, which makes it cheaper.
Right. So we've templatized it. There's still some customizations on our part that we have to do, but not as much. And they go through a course. Like there's a 9-10 unit course, 9 or 10 units, depending. And it allows you to customize it yourself. So, I mean, it is truly great. And hopefully we hit scale here in the next few months to a year, but like I'm pumped for it, and it's just kind of like growing this, and we've gotten more employees now. I think we're, I mean, not that many, like five, something
like that.
That's
great.
So it's crazy that like most of the company, and I kind of backed into this, you know what I mean? Like this was like tech that we've used before, and we just had all this tech lying around, and we just go, oh, we can tailor this for other people. And that's kind of how success happens, right? You just like keep going. Like, how do you define success?
Well, I've got two kids. I define success that they'd be net contributors to the world.
When
I'm long gone. So that's what I,
that's
I focus,
a good one.
I focus a lot of time on that. You know, success is, I really enjoy, as I know you do, like helping other people be successful. You know, I'm a former Army officer, and you kind of drilled into your head that the more leaders you make, as a leader, the more successful the world's going to be. People who are going to serve and help other people. So I just get really jazzed when someone I'm coaching or working with all of a sudden has a breakthrough and it has an exponential impact on so many other lives. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
It's just,
you want to impact as many people as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the truth is, I mean, I always tell people, most people in the world work for someone else. Okay.
Yep.
It's all of us crazy entrepreneurs who are out there trying to do it by our own. And so, you know, a business leader has an outsized impact on so many people's lives, so much more than the government does, so much more than a lot of other people do around your life. So it's really gratifying to try and make sure that, you know, leaders are doing a good job so other people can lead a quality life. You know, it sounds kind of Pollyanna, but that's what motivates me.
And I'm willing to admit right here that I have no idea what that word means that you just said. Pollyanna?
Oh, Pollyanna.
But what is
like overly idealistic, pie in the sky, you know.
All right, I love that. For all the guests that wouldn't admit. I see, this is the authenticity I'm talking about.
Well, you know,
this is what I love.
My son's got to study for the SATs and ACTs, so I got to use the big words and help him study vocab for those things.
Oh, my God. Wait, dude, you don't look a day over like 37.
You're my best friend. You're my new best
friend. You have a kid studying for a college exam.
Yep. Yep.
Wow. Congratulations on drinking from the fountain of youth, sir.
Thanks. Thanks. Okay. The wonders of Photoshop.
Yeah, 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 right. I just use 20-year-old pictures for everything. Thanks.
Yeah, that's funny.
Okay, so when you're coaching these people, what do you help them like overcome? I mean, I know like, because we're geared toward freelancers, solopreneurs. A lot of the things like becoming or starting as a founder and working their way up to a CEO, right? Like that, there's almost like a mental shift there. And what do you think makes the best founder turn into a good CEO?
Jeremy, I'm so sorry, but you're breaking up. I couldn't hear your question. Sorry, man.
Sorry. Okay, we'll try that again. Okay. So what do you think is the best skill set that helps a founder transition to a good CEO?
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, you know, skill sets, mindsets, there's a lot to all that, obviously, depending upon the size of the company, too. But, you know, I always tell people there's this subtle but significant shift that starts out even when, Jeremy, when you have those five team members like you described on your team, right? It's when you start to increase the percent of your brain space off of your product, off of your service, off of your experience, whatever you're selling, and you slowly increase the amount of time that you're focused on helping your team focus on the product, service, experience to uplift and change someone else's life, your customer. And that subtle shift has to start when you have one employee or team member or outsourced person on your team, because they may not be employees, but they could all, you could have a team of 15 outsourced men or women in the Philippines.
Sure.
Your ability to lift and shift your focus from your product, service, or experience and laser beam focus on that more and more on your team, that's that first step. And it's really hard for a lot of us.
I get it. Like, I think a lot of the things that happen to us that we need to pivot and evolve from, like, just create that catalyst of who we are. You know, like, I think my first company, I may have pivoted it like 10 or 11 times before, like, it actually found something that hit, right?
Yeah.
What is an example like you have pivoted in one of your companies or like the podcast that you're kind of like finding the audience and has kind of helped you become successful?
You know, I could tell you so many. I'll tell you a recent one. I blew $5,000 last fall. And so we have a program called Trail Team 10 where we bring 10 founders in and we work with them for 6 months and help them solve their problems and grow as a CEO. Well, we were sensing that a lot of founders don't have the ability to commit to 6 months and also be live for an hour a week. So I said, all right, well, we're going to create a membership, which we still are. But I thought, well, you know what? Maybe I need to do some courses first to get people to, you know, solve some problems with some courses like you do with your courses for your new business. And so I said, okay, we'll do some Facebook advertising, some LinkedIn advertising. We'll figure out if we can sell people into the course. Well, we just crashed and bombed. It was horrible. Oh. And I just like wasted $5,000 and realizing that, no, Todd, just start creating your membership and sell that rather than try and do some fancy, complex course to membership type of thing. I mean, that's just the most latest one, but I could tell you a whole
list
of
others. See, you tried to get fancy, man.
I did. I tried to get fancy.
You cannot get fancy, Todd. Like, so,
where were you 6 months ago to tell me that?
Like, I'm telling you, it's so funny the amount of people who like to do fancy things. Yeah. Yet, like, nothing fancy that I have ever done has ever helped me become successful. You know what I mean? Like, there's a romantic way to look at stuff. And then there's like the Jeremy bullshit way to like look at something where I just go, no, it's just like, go ask him over there. You know what I mean? Like, they go, no, I don't want to leave the building though. You know what I mean?
Well, I do, because then all of our graduates from our program, Trail Team 10, were saying to me, hey, they were really upset at me that it was ending. And I said,
oh, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I was like, well, remember, it was only 6 months. And they said, well, can't we do something? What do you have for us to keep going on? And that's when I realized, well, maybe I just create a membership because they're asking for it, right?
Mm.
So you're right. I mean, I think no matter who we are, we get caught up in complexity and, you know, keeping it simple. It sounds like you figured out that secret sauce. Like, hey, keep it simple. Help people create an app in a very easy way.
Absolutely. Dude, I am the sauce. You know what I mean? Sometimes I believe that. Like, I think, oh, I'm selling a crap ton of these, and I'm sitting here going, I'm the best salesperson of anyone that I've got. And I go, well, maybe people are buying this because of me. How do I extrapolate that? That's right. Kind of where I'm at right now. You know what I mean? Like, how do I get my personality out there and the brand out there and the Not Boring Business product out there? And it just culminates around, like, one person. How do you divide that between like the Todd and the founder to CEO and everything else you got going on, like the personal stuff and the company stuff, or is there a divide?
Well, I mean, I always tell people know me. I am who I am everywhere. So when I go to my kids' school, they know I'm some goofy former Army guy. When I'm on my podcast, they all know. I just like love hearing people's stories, and I'm same goofy dude. So I mean, I like to think I'm the same guy in all those different places. But if you mean how do you integrate all those things, like to be successful, is that what you mean?
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean. First of all, remember, I'm a former Army guy. So, I mean,
100%.
I know how to be productive. It's been drilled in my brain since, how old was I, 19 or 20 years old. And so I get a lot done in a day. You may not remember, they used to have these commercials about the Army. You know, we do more before 9 a.m. than most of the world or something like that.
I remember the 1-800-COLLECT-CALL. Wait, yeah. No, that wasn't an Army one. That was with, like, Shaq's dad was an
Shaq's
Army
dad,
general.
Yeah. So I am a pretty productive person. I'm pretty task oriented, so I can get a lot of stuff done. But there are drawbacks to that because there are sometimes like, whoa, hold on, let's get the team together, step back, look at the strategy, look at the big picture, look at the long term, because you know I can get caught up in that. But I'm a pretty productive guy, so I color code my calendar, for example. So in a visual time, I look at my calendar, say how much of my calendar is money producing, how much of it is networking, how much is it family. So visually, I could look at any week and get a sense of the balance of that week, and I can fast forward over the next couple weeks, and I see, oh, you know what, I got a lot of family things coming on, or got a lot of work stuff coming on, and like. I think it's not about balance. I think it's about integration, and it's seasonal. So the summer, for example, my kids are in camps and doing all sorts of stuff. And so I know, okay, my work calendar is going to be a little bit more constricted, but it's only for 3 months. I'll ramp up more in the fall when my calendar changes. You know what I mean?
Yep, exactly.
So that's my secret sauce, but I'm not so sure it's a secret, though.
No, I like the secret. That's great secret sauce. Well, I will tell you this. What is your secret sauce to get motivated, right? So like a lot of times we build these companies and I see it every day, Todd. I'm telling you. With all the people that want to be founders or like come to my office and work a little bit. Because I invite people to the office.
Yeah.
And to just come and create together. And it's a badass office. I just want to take advantage of it. So,
I'll see it someday.
You're going to have to come out here. When's the next time you're in L.A.?
I was just in San Francisco a couple months ago, so I need to come to L.A., yeah.
Just a quick little jaunt.
I know you drive to San Francisco just to have coffee with people, so maybe I need to drive to L.A. just to have coffee with you and head back to Cincinnati.
And then let's document that, because that works. You know what I mean?
You did it twice, didn't you?
Yes, I did. It's so funny that you bring that up, because it's like, that's how much I value in-person relationships. And it's just the arbitrage of like, hey, that guy's time was a little more valuable than mine, so I just took 11 hours out of my day to go meet him for coffee. I think it was the greatest thing ever, and the story itself got me published in Entrepreneur, so like
that's where I read it.
That's where it's all for me, so I love that.
That was a really cool story. I was glad you shared it.
Oh my god, thanks Todd. So thanks for getting that plug in there too, by the way. You're the best at that. Okay. So I usually have people, I talk with founders all the time.
Yeah.
And the problem is that they stick with one thing for a couple months. I actually have a buddy who I think maybe changed his career 5 times in like 2 weeks.
Wow.
And I go, that is the anti-path to success. Mm. Right? Like and I feel like it's just a motivational thing for him, right? Like, how do you find what motivates you, and how do you help the thing that motivate you in times of need? Because it's definitely going to come where you get a little demotivated as you're building and you kind of lose sight. How do you stay motivated?
Well, first, when I started my company, before I started, I had to pitch my wife, and I had a 50-page slide deck to pitch my wife. I say, hey, I want to do this entrepreneurial thing. In order to do that slide deck, like I treated my wife like an investor. In order to do that slide deck, I had to go back and become super self-aware about what motivates me. That's the first step. I see tons of founders react to what's happening around in the marketplace, and they don't take that couple steps back and say, well, wait a second. What are the things that have motivated me in the past? Because those are good indicators for the future. So I went and took, you're gonna laugh at me, but I went all the way back to kindergarten, took all my report cards, all my work like evaluations, all my Army evaluations, all my corporate evaluations, and just ran it through some software. I said, all right, tell me what are the common themes about me. And it was eye-opening. I was like, wow, you know, I didn't really ever think I would get so much insight about myself and my motivations and see the patterns more clearly. But that takes work. And I did the work up front. I was like, ah, that's right.
Absolutely.
That does motivate me. I do get excited about this. I do get excited about that. And then when I was able to pitch it to my wife, I had to prepare to share those insights and synthesize all that in a way to communicate it. So that's the second thing is, when you have to teach someone something else, you have to be clear about it. So I had to teach my wife about my own motivations, so I had to be clear about them. That was the second step. And then the third step was, I'm always monitoring it. I take tons of assessments. I am a readaholic. You can't see. I have my own drone that goes from Amazon to my office here. My bookshelves are overflowing.
My personal drone.
That's right, my personal drone. Call him Droney. And, so I'm always asking myself those questions. What motivated me this past week? I journal each week, and I ask myself these four questions. What am I still worried about? You know, what am I what motivated me in this past week, you know, was a win, made me feel good. Those types of questions I journal about each week. So, I mean, those are the three things I figure out. And so I know what motivates me. Yeah. I don't have to. It's not something I wonder about. So therefore, when people come to me with new ideas, I get pitched all the time. People want me to be involved in things. Like, no, that doesn't align with my motivations, you know?
Right.
So that's what I do.
So, okay, now, how do you help other people stay motivated, right? Mm. Is it that same process where you go, okay, I want you to upload all these papers and we're going to make a word cloud? Like, well, how do you do that?
I love that. Well, there are a lot of sophisticated tools nowadays to be able to help people uncover their historical motivations. And so I use one called the Berkman, BIRKMAN, super powerful. Started by an entrepreneur like over 50 years ago. He was like one of the original entrepreneurs. He's a good, smart guy, Dr. Roger Berkman. And that kind of accelerates helping people uncover what motivates them. Because we got to know what motivated you in the past first. Sure. I mean, because that is, people don't usually change their spots, Jeremy. They don't.
I agree. I actually have something that says, I want to find what I've meant to do in life. And I go, what were you doing at 10? Mm. Right? What were you doing at 10 or 11? And I was like, if I really answer that question for myself, I was like selling soda at fairs. I was starting a sales club. I was going and selling myself and doing, I was like hiring my brother to sell for less than what I made. So I made profit on him. It's like all these other things. Hired my brother, made profit off him. He loves that story. So like,
that's so cool.
That's what I was doing at 9, 10. I was printing off business cards, right? Like I remember in middle school, I used to spend my summers in Nashville. So very close to you. Mm. And my uncle was an entrepreneur, and I remember going through buildings in downtown, like going, oh my God, I want to paint my own office one day. Right. Like, this is the things that I wanted to do like growing up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're right. People don't change their spots if that dovetails off well with that.
I think it does. It's a great story. And, you know, I had a paper route when I was a kid. No one has paper routes anymore, I don't think.
It's electronic routes.
It's electronics. Yeah. But yeah.
It's the fancy stuff. Why are we doing fancy stuff? You know?
Too fancy. Some kid's going to create their own, like, you know, get a copy machine now and just make their own newspaper in some town and drive around their bike because they're going to say, hey, I'm going to go back to the basics.
back to the foundational work that created greatness.
Yeah.
Okay. So you teach leaders. We'll wrap up here soon. But you teach leaders. What do you believe? And we're gonna end on this one because you're just terrific. What do you think is the mark of a great leader? Mm.
The mark of a great leader. Well, there's a lot of marks, but you want me to pick one, I assume. So
no, I'll want you to pick one.
Okay, I'll pick one. One mark of a great leader, and I'll continue this theme, is to be so self-aware about yourself that you know how to manage your own behaviors to effectively influence others.
Mm.
Yeah. You don't know yourself, really sure. hard to know other people.
You know what's funny to me is that answer sounds so great. My answer is normally, will people work for you for free?
See, that's you know? Even, see, I was too fancy. I was too fancy.
Todd, you're getting fancy on me, brother.
I like yours much better. Will people work for me for free? Much better.
Will you no, do that's this a good for
one.
Free?
No, you know? Why is that one yours? I'm just curious.
Because I've really looked at, like, dude, I used to get emails before I really started the Not Boring Business brand and, like, the all this other things,
yeah.
like the product. I would get email. I would sit down with people, and people would be like, oh, man, I want to get involved some way. I would get an email later, you're so inspirational, can I help in any way? Or a text messages. People from years ago that are like, dude, do you need any help? And I go, what is this about me that, like, I was just becoming, like you said, self-aware,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Like, what is it about me that these people want to do? And so I go, hey, will you help design this? And then they would design this thing. And I had a designer that would help me for like 2 years on and off. And I was like, oh my gosh, would these people work for me now that I pay these employees? Would these people work for me if I couldn't pay them?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like they're staying around for me, for the other people around them. That's just kind of how I've kind of crafted that. Would they do this for free? Right. Are they passionate enough about you or your mission or your company? And would they stick around at least for a few weeks while you couldn't make payroll? I don't know.
You know,
I feel like that's a...
love that. And I think it sounds like the title of your book that you're going to write down the road about leadership.
Oh, my gosh. There it is.
There it is. Do you think it has anything to do with your Midwestern Michigan grow-up charm? I mean, seriously, you're a Midwestern guy at heart, even though you're in L.A.
I am. I am a Midwestern boy. Like,
yeah.
Who... I don't know. I tend to laugh more, like be jovial more.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I remember just doing more when I was younger. Maybe I've capitalized off of charm a little much. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's my one true superpower.
Mm.
I don't know if it's nurtured or natured.
I don't know either, but all I know is that you've got people who you said work for you for free and follow you, so they must believe in you, right? So that's another thing about leadership.
Yeah,
you got to believe in that person. I think that's really cool, and I love that. I want you to teach other people how to do that.
Oh my, let's teach other people, and now I'm gonna have to teach other people how to get people to work for them for free.
Yes,
right.
Now you might run afoul of the law because someone told me recently that in a for-profit business, people cannot work for you for free.
Like, without getting. No, that's against the law. So that's
apparently
on it.
Yeah, okay. Apparently. All yeah.
Right, well,
but maybe you can give them some in-kind services, like you can help them build their app or something like that.
I want to say that's got to be it, right? But
yeah.
They've got to also inspire me. I don't know. You know, like a thing is would I work for someone for free? What would it be? Like I know I have before, but it hasn't lasted very long. Dude, I got people to work like a designer, a young, hungry, like part of the formula is, are they hungry enough too, right? Like, do they want to make a stance? And a lot of people are like, how do you do this? I have to reconcile this sometimes. And sometimes it's really demoralizing when they go, like when people say, you know what, this is a great idea, but I'm investing in you, or I'm doing this because I'm betting on you. And it feels like, like that feels like so much pressure personally on me. You know what I mean?
I do, because I hear it all the time from the founders I talk to on my show. They say stuff like, oh my God, this is real now. One of the guys on my team just got a mortgage. This has got to be successful. Or they say,
right,
oh my
right.
God, one of our developers, she just had a baby and we got to make sure we pay our health insurance bill. You know, it's real.
Right.
You know, it's like all of a sudden the weight of responsibility, you see it differently on your shoulders.
Like people are and it's such a personal thing. Like I don't have founders, so I'm glad your podcast isn't founders to CEOs, but I am a founder. I don't think I can work well with other founders, to be honest. Like I'm a boss. I found out I'm a control motivated founder.
Okay.
Versus like a wealth-motivated founder. I'd rather have what you have right now, a $4, $5, $7, $10 million company where the margin is $7 million versus, I think, a $500 million company or a $1 billion company mm-hmm. where the margin is like $10 million.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a lot of different headaches too, right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's totally different scenario and a totally different group of people are attracted to doing that type of stuff. But Jeremy, you've got it going on. I mean, here you are having a successful business. You got a team of five and you're serving people. And I mean, I consider that to be very successful.
Oh, I love you, Todd.
Well, seriously, I mean, most people don't get to that. Don't even get to that level.
Trust me, it's bleeding through my eyes. Like, I'm on a regimen of Ambien and Adderall. You know what I mean? Like, it's just constantly, like, me having to go, oh, you've got health insurance. Great, that's another 4 hours I've got to work today just to make sure that we've got his stuff taken care of.
I know.
Maybe that is a thing where it's like lead by example. You know what I mean? Like, people see you're the last one, the first one to clock in, the last one to clock out. And they go, oh, man, I just want to, like, I don't think he's going to fail.
Mm.
So I kind of want to, like, ride those coattails. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Showing them beautiful coattails.
Well, I think you're a nice guy, you know, and people, you engender probably goodwill because you work hard and you're trying to do the right thing. And so that inspires people, would be my guess. Because you don't get five people working for you, even if you are paying them, not even paying anything for them. They don't spend their valuable earthly time unless they believe in you as a leader, I think.
Whoa, that's good enough to end on right there, Todd.
Good. I'm glad.
you have brought so much value to the audience here, but like you brought so much value to me, I think, as well.
We're right back at you.
I was on your podcast.
I haven't been able to tell you when I burned through $5,000 yet, so that was good to get that off my chest.
we're gonna have to upload that as fast as possible, just so I get breaking news.
Breaking news, yeah.
Todd lost $5,000 last fall.
Exactly.
Okay, I love it. Where can our audience find you, my man?
Yeah, we're from foundertoceo.com. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, you name it. All you have to do is Google From Founder to CEO. And you will find us.
Oh, my God. Us. What's the difference between saying us and me? Right? Mm. Like, do you think it truly, am I reading too much into this? Or is it you really mean us, right? Like, versus me? Or is it not, that doesn't mean anything?
Oh, and it's you just us. Said us. I mean,
yeah?
I mean everything that we've been doing is an us. I have a huge team of people. And I truly believe that no one creates anything of value without a powerful team. So it's definitely an us.
All right. You can find them, founder to CEO. Go back, hit the back button, 30 seconds, 15 seconds. You're amazing. Thank you so much, Todd, for coming on. Find them. Thanks, Todd, so much, man.
Thanks. My pleasure, Jeremy.